So we're going to begin Jonah, Lesson 4, and I've entitled it, Man's Search for Truth. Now, if we look at Jonah, we start in chapter 1, verse 7, and we're going to notice that and they said to one another, come, let us cast lots that we may know on whose account this evil has come upon us. That statement makes no sense to modern man. It's like casting yourself, if I may use the word, onto the whims of chance. And yet I'm going to show as we go through this that that's not exactly what's going on here. Because if it was going on, if it was just chance, if it was just arbitrary, out of the blue, then the casting of lots and picking Jonah makes no sense. It has no meaning. And if it has no meaning, then the rest of the book of Jonah falls apart. And our understanding of how the Bible is to be understood falls apart. And thus, you can lay your Bible on the coffee table and walk away from it because it's no more able to point you in the direction of truth than just casting of the dice or guessing. But that's not what's going on here. But to understand what's going on here, we're going to have to step out of our 20th, 21st century mindset and go back in time to a very different worldview. So that's what we're going to start with, so we can begin to understand what, in fact, is occurring here. And I call it man's search for truth because that's exactly what man has been doing ever since the fall. When they lost the truth, they turned around and began searching for the truth. Unfortunately, according to Romans 3, 10 through 18, they search every place but the right place. There is none who seeks after God. There is none who does good. No, not one. So ancient man sought spiritual understanding by the casting of lots. And we really don't even know what that is. Now, years and years ago, I used to be an oracle. And I used the I Ching. And we would cast the coins. And we would cast them twice. From that, you get your hexagram. From that, you get your moving and non-moving lines. Then you consult the book. You look up the meanings of the hexagram and the various lines and the moving and non-moving lines. And you formulate an answer. It was one of the best books around because it was produced by that prestigious university, Yale. Long time ago. And I was very good at it. I don't mean I was very good conning people. I was very good because the answers I achieved answered the questions. There was something to it. Now, today, people reject that totally. And for good reason. And we're going to talk about that toward the end of this lesson. There's a good reason to not have that mindset. Because there's a problem with that approach. But there's also a problem with modern man's approach. Now, what we call science today was actually called natural philosophy at the beginning of the Enlightenment period after the Renaissance, after the medieval period. The rejection of scholasticism as a foundational philosophy. And one of the reasons that they had this spate, this explosion of knowledge, was because they were looking for absolute truth in all the wrong places. They were looking for it in nature around them. Well, that's exactly what the sailors were doing. They were looking for truth through natural phenomena. They found truth. Natural philosophers discovered that they could not find truth. And so they quietly decided, we're not searching for truth anymore. Now, probably the last natural philosopher who sought truth, and he wouldn't have called himself a natural philosopher, was Albert Einstein. His unified general theory was nothing more than a search to correlate natural phenomenon in one theory with absolute truth, absolute precision. And he failed. And of course he failed. Because he took that which lay behind this natural world, what we call the metaphysical or the spiritual realm, and he totally ignored it. The sailors did not. And so what happened with natural philosophy, it divided itself, with one branch being called philosophy and the other branch being called science. Science is not the search for truth. It's just the search for whatever we can find and use. And because we have a partial understanding of it, we have unintended consequences. Yes, we can use nuclear energy. Unintended consequence? Radiation. What do we do with it? Yes, we can generate electricity, a type of power. What is electricity? We don't know. Oh, we have theories, but we don't have facts. We have medicine based on theories. Very few facts. So our world is underpinned by theories, not by facts. So in many respects, our understanding of the world is even more tenuous than theirs. So the casting of lots is based on the belief that the physical can reveal the spiritual realm around it. In other words, the two are constantly interacting. But because we have no mechanism for understanding the spiritual realm, because we don't, there's no pineal eye. There's a pineal gland, but there's no third eye. There's no organ that we can correlate that actually receives factual information from the spiritual realm. Now, we do have an organ that does interface the physical body with the spiritual soul of man. That's the brain. That's as close as we come. But we can't go out beyond that. We can only receive what comes in. But we have no way of determining its veracity, its truthfulness. I was talking to a woman the other day, called herself a Christian, a positive, but she doesn't believe the Bible, and of course she doesn't go to church, and of course she knows nothing about salvation. She says, I wish for things, and they happen. That's how I know it's true. I said to her, I said, well, why are you cutting hair then? Because if I could do that, I'd be wishing for a lot more than being a hairdresser. See, her own approach was contradictory to her statements. Her whole life philosophy was not pinned to anything concretely. This is what separates the true Christian from all other faiths. We are pinned concretely to absolute truth contained in God's Word. But to obtain that truth means that we have to understand it from God's perspective. That doesn't mean we allegorize it to make it spiritual and deep, because then we just make it up as we go along. But it means we must understand it from the perspective of the writer, the problems the writer was looking at and discussing, and the solutions that are given, or the information that is given by God to that writer for everybody for all time. Now, the casting of lots, to be absolutely honest, we have no understanding of what that actually is. We have no idea what they did. You watch the movies, they're throwing bones in the ground. They're doing whatever. Now, we know what the Etruscans did when they read livers, because they actually left behind a model of one. Brass, I believe. With inscriptions and stuff on it that we can translate and read. But that's not casting lots. And they wrote books. And they had a whole school of how to read the flights of birds. And the meaning of directions and laying out of the city for the best growth and the best interaction with the spiritual around them. They were constantly aware that what they were doing in the physical was intimately connected with the spiritual. Modern man, since the Enlightenment, has rejected all of that. The high priest, he had the Ummim and the Thummim, whatever they were. And with that, he could, through questions, access the direct will of God in a rudimentary fashion. We have absolutely no idea how they did it or what they did. It's not written down. It's not in the Bible. The Bible just tells us they had it so they could do this, but there's no directions on how they did it. And probably the last instance we have in the Bible of the casting of lots are the apostles casting lots to determine who was going to be the apostle, the replacement for Judas Iscariot. And of course, it fell on a person, because it has to. When you're casting lots, you're looking for an answer, you're going to find an answer. So they cast between two people, so it had to be one or the other. There was no third alternative in that casting of lots. And so they chose Matthias. God chose Paul. Paul was the replacement, God's replacement, for Judas Iscariot. Now, Paul called himself an apostle, but he didn't call himself a replacement. That wasn't his place to do so. Now, if we were to take current history, like the Hurricane Jose that's wandering around in the Atlantic right now, ancient man's view of Jose, of this hurricane, would be God's blessing, their gods, blessing them, America, for not allowing the hurricane to make landfall, especially in those areas that just had suffered under the impact of Hurricane Irma. That's how they would have understood that. The will of the gods. The Hebrews would have said kind of the same thing. It is the will of God that we not suffer under the effects of Hurricane Jose. Now, since it didn't make landfall, we can agree with that statement. We cannot agree with the statement that God directly caused Hurricane Irma to impact Florida to teach man a lesson. You can't make that statement. We know it was the will of God that it do so because it did so. But we cannot make the statement that God was the direct causation of it, like Kirk Cameron has done. Nor can we make the statement that rational man has made that these hurricanes are tremendous because of climate change, global warming. We cannot make that statement either. We don't have the factual evidence to make any statement. We just know that it was the will of God that it not make landfall, because it did not make landfall. So ancient man viewed life via a lens of interaction between the physical and the spiritual. And the correlation depended on really God's truth. And when I say the correlation, the truthfulness of their statements depended upon their knowledge of God. Which meant pagan man, by and large, was guessing. And occasionally guessed right. Just like we do when we guess. When we get together our theories and we say it really means this, we're making a statement of fact. We're guessing. Because we do not know that is a statement of fact. We just know that it works X amount of times correctly, or as we assume it should. But because it does not do it 100% of the time, it is not based on fact. So occasionally, ancient man would come up and guess correctly and call it the will of the gods. But that did not point them toward God. How does modern man interpret the view of Hosea? Well, if you look at the graphic, notice we can measure air pressure. We know there are high pressure areas and they're good weather and they force an outward force from the center of the H. And the low pressures bring bad weather and they pull air into them. And so we see down there, Hosea, that big H, it's sitting right there over the Carolinas, and it's forcing Hosea out to sea, preventing it from making landfall. And we say, see, this is what we know. We can predict. Kind of. Because jokes about the weathermen have been persistent throughout the 20th into the 21st century. Why? Because we do not perceive the spiritual that lies behind the physical. What formed the high pressure? Why is it there? Why are the low pressures where they're at? Science doesn't ask that question because it cannot answer that question. Thus, we do not know. We can take measurements, but we don't know why those pressure areas are there. So we ignore it. And we just say, it didn't make landfall because there's a high pressure there. But why is the high pressure there? Why was it not there last week? We can't answer that. For us, it is an unknown. Therefore, we don't know if it was the intervention of God or Satan. Because remember, Satan with permission can influence weather. Read the book of Job. Fire from heaven, kill the servants. Tornado came through the home, killed his children. Weather phenomenon. Modern man would say, well, that's too bad, that's his chance. Ancient man would have said, no, that was the will of the gods because they were evil. That's what Job was thinking. But neither viewpoint is entirely correct. However, we're looking at the reasonableness of ancient man. Notice what these sailors did. If we read further down, when the lot falls on Jonah, whatever it is that did, he confessed, yes, you're right, it's me. And they picked him up and threw him in the sea, right? No, they didn't. They held an inquiry, an inquisition, to determine the facts. That's what an inquisition is. A true inquisition is to determine the facts. The word got tainted because the Catholics, especially in Spain, used that word to not determine the facts. Just to make the facts fit what they wanted to have happen, which was Rob the Jews of all their wealth and throw the Muslims out of the country and build the first nation state of Spain, or the second nation state of Spain. They were falling in the pathway of Portugal, which was also forming a nation state at the time. So the whole formation of nation state was developed by robbing from other people in the name of religion. Because that's what religion does. It's a system of works. It robs. And it robs everybody, even those who think they have the power. Because at some point, they still have to stand before God and give an account. And it won't be a pretty sight for them. So ancient men did not just arbitrarily pick Jonah and toss him overboard to appease the gods. They reasonably searched for the truth, consistent with their worldview. Then they said to him, "Tell us on whose account this evil has come upon us." Now, almost every translation I looked at has called this evil. But you have to look at the context. It's not really evil. It's calamity here. This disaster. Why has this storm come upon us, threatening to swamp us and destroy us? It's not a moral evil. That's not what they're saying right here. They're saying, why has this calamity come upon us? Once again, you have to look at the original language to get a better understanding of what's going on here, of their viewpoint. Because if they really thought that this was morally evil, there's no room for discussion. Pick them up, throw them overboard. That's not what they're talking about. Why has this calamity come upon us? You tell us. Because they base their worldview upon the gods. Well, their view of their gods is going to be different than Jonah's worldview, and because of Jonah's gods. That's why this whole thing started after the storm that they woke Jonah up, is that everyone else is praying to their gods. Get off your butt and pray to your God that this storm will abate. Tell us the reason for it. And, of course, nothing worked. That's when they cast the lots. If you remember Shakespeare, The Tempest, the story, it starts off with a tremendous storm. Why? To presage the evil that was occurring in the spiritual realm. That's how it set the tone of the story. Now, that's pre-Enlightenment period. So even very late in man's history, we still believe and the interconnectedness between the physical and the spiritual. And we should today also. Because that is what the Bible shows us. The two are connected. It's based on the presupposition that the sovereign God will make his will known to man through measurable phenomena. Because that's all we can perceive. Our five senses can only perceive measurable phenomena. Sight, hearing, taste, touch, feel. Measurable phenomena. That's the only mechanism we have. Then from the collection of that data, we analyze, we call that thinking, and we arrive at a conclusion that may or may not be true. If you think before you collect data, that's guessing. That's not thinking. Now, the Hebrews had an advantage because they had prophets. Prophets were there to tell them God's will in specific circumstances in their history, because they were a theocracy. That was the role of the prophet. To tell them God's absolute truth at that moment in time as to what they were doing that was correct or incorrect. Usually incorrect. To get them back on course. But that's all stopped with the canonization of the Bible. because we don't need that now. We just need people to read the Bible and teach us how to understand it. Not to tell us the mind of God, because we all hold the mind of God in our hand, in the Bible. You just have to understand how to read it, just like you would any work of literature. Save our souls, SOS. The sailors cast lots to determine who on board caused their calamity. Modern man scoffs at their belief, though he would have attributed the storm to chance, like we talked about, which is basically another name for gods. Whether you call it chance, whether you call it Zeus, whether you call it Poseidon, whether you call it Neptune, whether you call it doesn't matter. You still have no control over it. And you're still looking for an explanation of why it's there. And we still are today. That's why we're calling it climate change. So what's the difference between climate change and Neptune? Ancient man correctly deduced the storm is a direct result of Jonah's rejecting God's will, given over to Lucifer. Now, we talked about that in the last lesson. So if you haven't heard that, you need to go back and listen to that, look at the graphics, to understand why I'm able to make this statement. And Jonah confesses his complicity, which is revealed by the casting of lots, which shows that the sailors, though they did not understand why the lot correctly fell on Jonah, it correctly fell on Jonah. And it correctly fell on Jonah because that was God's will. And Jonah confesses that this is God's will. So that's what they were doing, holding an inquisition to find the truth. They wanted to obtain the facts to ascertain the veracity of their situation in order to guide their next actions. Remember, anytime you're in a group, you're in your own society. Whether it's at work, whether it's temporary as a wagon train, they had their own constitutions, had their own courts, meted out their own punishments, and would actually throw people out of the wagon train if they would not follow the rules. And they literally wrote their own constitutions based on the American Constitution. Same way on a ship. You have this closed society that has to work together for mutual benefit and survival. That's what they were doing. And so they need to know what was going on so they could make a decision about what to do to save themselves. So they asked Jonah about himself in order to understand his worldview and how it could affect them. They could not understand Jonah's God unless Jonah explained him. Now, what was the purpose of the law on Mount Horeb? It was to teach man the holiness of God, the sinfulness of man, and God's answer for man, so that man could obtain, through the actions of God, the righteousness of God. And the Jews were to practice that and then take it outward. Well, unbeknownst to Jonah, he's already a missionary. He's not a missionary to Assyria, but he's a missionary on the ship. And he's a missionary because he made bad decisions. But he's still a missionary. And he's revealing to them the truth of God in a limited fashion. And so their belief in the intervention of God is required that they understand about Jonah's God so they can ascertain the reason for their current plight. And Jonah tells him, only God is God. He created the land. He created the seas. Now, that is absolutely a correct statement. And we can say with absolute certainty it is a correct statement. We may not agree on how he did it, but we can agree on the fact that he did do it, because the Bible tells us that in the first chapter of Genesis. In the beginning, God created. God bara out of nothing. And he separated the waters above from the waters below, and then he made dry land appear. So he's making an absolutely correct statement. And they're just agog at that statement. Because Neptune did not create the seas. He just controls them, kind of. Zeus did not create the air. He just controls it, kind of. And same way for all the other gods and goddesses. They didn't make it, they just controlled it. So to say that God created the land and the seas means that he has absolute control over them. And God tells us this, especially in the book of Job. Now, Jonah had already told them, probably when he bought passage, because they were asking, what do you want to go so far for? Well, I'm having a bad time, and my God and I, we're just not on good terms, so I'm going to leave the land. Remember, gods were tied to the land. So if you leave the land, you leave the influence of that god behind. And you go to a new land, and you come under the influences of those gods. That was pagan man's viewpoint. Gods were limited to the land that they were in. So they did not think that this was an issue. Now they're thinking this is a big issue. Because this is not working out well. Because they're not anywhere close to any land. And Jonah's God is still very much active. He is not a god tied to a land. He is a god who is of the entire creation. Now they're afraid. So Jonah put their plight into context. Facts are of little value until you put them into a context. A trial is not just about asserting the facts, but it's about putting them into a context to obtain an understanding of whether that person is guilty or not guilty. I can say, I killed the cat. That'd be a fact. I got up one day and I shot the cat. I killed the cat. I backed the car out of the garage. The cat was hiding under the car. I ran over the cat. I killed the cat. One was deliberate. The other one was an accident. You have to put it into a context for that fact to make any sense. That's why news today, and most all the time throughout history, they put their facts into their own context. Now, if you buy their context, you have to buy their conclusion. But that may not be the best or the true context. Remember, propaganda is all about putting facts into your context to achieve your result. So in that sense, almost all news is propaganda. And if I just report facts, but I've not put them into a context, I've not told you anything. And so here's what the sailors were doing. They knew the facts. They're at sea. There's a storm. They're going to die. There's no way they can get out of this. Now they've discovered it's Jonah's God that has caused this. Because Jonah has been disobedient and his God is very powerful. Because obviously they're not anywhere close to Israel. And Jonah's God is still working against them. Now they have a context. And it's disobedience to God. So there's a great evil in ancient society. If you know the will of God and you don't do it, bad things happen. And nobody is going to intervene between you and your gods to make that any different because they can't. That was their mind view. If you don't understand that, go back and read the Greek tragedies. The Greek tragedies are not just stories, but they're actually ongoing discussions of Hellenistic philosophy of that day.